would you say that the membership has decreased a whole great deal?
Tremendous amount.
How do you
about half. In the Pittsburgh area group, I think, has decreased by half. My memory of it in those days was that we had about 400 members. I think we have barely over 200. Now, that doesn't count the outlying ones. Originally, when I first joined, it was only Pittsburgh. All people who lived in Mount Lebanon belonged to the Pittsburgh League. Then we became the Pittsburgh area, and that took in Fox Chapel and Churchill and so on. Because when we studied local issues, those people really had no concern with any Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh School Board, for instance. So we expanded like that. And then groups spun off, the Mount Lebanon, the people who lived in Mount Lebanon, again, because their local issues had nothing to do with ours, formed their own league. There has to be a certain number and so on. They have to get approval. And so it became Monroeville, Upper St. Clair, Bethel Park, Moon Township, North Hills, and so on. Some of them may have grown some. Monroeville's gone down terribly, and Pittsburgh has dropped for a variety of reasons. A lot of women went back to school. A lot of women went to work. A lot of organizations with special interests sprang up. The TCPE, for example, though I'm sure they didn't mean to do that, drained some of our members who were interested in the schools and only in the schools, who couldn't have cared less about any other governmental issue, but who were very concerned with the schools. Common Cause came along. There were all kinds of groups that came along and took people away. Some people, it's very expensive to maintain the league. Our dues don't cover our expenses of membership in national and state and county now. Our dues are now $25, and we pay more than that as a per member fee to national, state, and county, so that we have to raise funds.
How do you do that?
Well, we do that by a variety of ways. We ask for donations from corporations and so on, but we have other ways. We had treasure sales some years when we collected all kinds of goods and sold them in somebody's garage. And we do what they call shoe shopping. We've done that for selling. That's very, very good. A company that runs some of these small shoe stores downtown, and I wouldn't be too sure of the name, so I don't want to mention them. You go down, you buy a pair of shoes, and then you go down, you return the pair of shoes. And then you make a report to the parent company on how you were treated when you bought them and how you were treated when you returned them. I mean, even if you like them, you return them, you buy them again, but you have to return them because they want to know how it was handled by the people in the store. And they paid us a certain amount for every shopping excursion for a pair of shoes. And we did very well with that. And then several years in a row, we did the ARCO car care clinics. We got over $1,000, and to us $1,000 is a lot of money. We set up appointments for people to go to various ARCO stations and learn what their cars were doing, how you measured, how you decided how much oil you had, and how you filled your gas tank from a self-service pump, and how you tested your tire pressure, and all kinds of, and your battery, and how it worked, and what you do with it, and all kinds of things like this. They were very popular. We had an enormous registration for that. There were ARCO stations in various parts of the city and county. There was one down the corner of Craig and Forbes. And there was one further down near the near that university thing that used to be Cross Gates, one down there. And then there were some out in the suburbs. And people would, and they were various times, and people would call up and say what time and which one they wanted to go to. And we registered like 25 people.
Well, did they pay for this?
No.
Well, how was it?
They paid us. ARCO paid us per person, for a number of people who went. But the people who attended didn't pay a nickel. It was free to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was an advertising gimmick, I suppose. And that Vic, the one at Craig and Forbes, he was crazy about it. He did very well, and he was wonderful. I went to his. It was fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I took the reservations. I sat here with pads of paper and, you know, with dates and times and stuff, and registered people who called in for appointments. And
I was going to ask you if there was any of the, were there any presidents who were very outstanding, lead presidents?
Well, actually, the lead president was the most outstanding. It was before my time, and her name is slipped me in her
head. Ted McLean.
McLean.
Ted McLean.
Yes. Ted McLean, as far as I was concerned. I knew her. I was not as present because she was present before I came in. But I went to a state convention as a delegate in 1962. I think it was, and she was president of the State League at that time, and I had a great deal to do with her. She was fine. Dorothy Boyne, of course, too. I thought she was a wonderful person. The presidents I knew, Nancy Freeman was the one who was president when I came in. She went to Washington, and she's not here anymore. And then I think Jean Lempert, who's still here, was president, and Liz Shapiro was president during, before me. I think Jean must have been the president just before me. Ruth was before that. And then there have been a lot, and my first vice president was president after Aggie Tuden. Who became an employee of the county commissioners afterwards, yeah. Go ahead.
Could you discuss the league's part in the decision of the county commissioners to find housing for dependent and neglected children, separate from that provided for the juvenile delinquents? Is that something that you knew about?
No, I didn't. I don't remember being concerned with that.
No.
You're not talking about group homes, are you? No.
This is something that we read your presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Was not. This one, securing a second judge for juvenile court.
And I don't remember. You see, this wouldn't be Pittsburgh issue. Remember something? There's a division here. I was president of the Pittsburgh Area League. The overall county had another president of all the. And if this was a county decision, then it would have been hers. If it was a state decision, then it would have been the state league, and I, off the top of my head, I can't remember. You know, as a matter of fact, I have a great deal of difficulty. I would have to do a bunch of reading and recalling things to my mind to remember what went on, because so much of what we did, what the president does, is administrative, that you don't keep up as much as you used to with actual issues. Presidents of leagues don't decide things, you see, at all. Neither do boards.
I think it'd be interesting if you told them how having been a league member myself,
yeah.
I know
yeah.
how, I think it'd be interesting to
yeah.
how you come to
how you come
consensus.
To, how you come to decisions. It's maybe this is one of the things that attracted me when I came to know about it, was how the decisions are made. The committee studies whatever it is has been voted to be studied during that year or 2 years or whatever it is. And while it's while you say that the there's never a bias, you're not allowed to have a bias. In other words, whatever you study, you've got to look at all sides of. There was, for example, during the state school study, the question of combining smaller schools into larger units, and there were a lot of pros and cons. Some people thought this was a good thing to do, and some people thought this was a bad thing to do. And we, while we were not allowed to say which is which, you know, is it good or is it bad, what we had to do was present the arguments on both sides. And we would present these to the small groups, which we call units, which meet in people's houses and usually sometimes in other places. And the discussion leader has questions called consensus questions that the group is supposed to decide. And the discussion leader tries to bring out from the group all shades of opinion. Does anybody think that, you know, leading questions, does anybody think that it should be this way instead of the other way? And no votes taken. The discussion leader tries to get what we call the feel of the group. And the discussion leader says, do I understand that you all feel that it would be better to have larger schools because the money would be able to provide language labs and things like this, whereas small schools couldn't do this? And then heads shake and people smile and nod, and then the discussion leader says, do any of you feel differently about this? We want the minority opinion too. And then people speak up and say they didn't agree, and for this reason or that reason they didn't agree. And all this goes down in writing. There's a recorder who records it. And the feelings of decisions at each unit goes back to the board. And then the board collates them all and decides where the majority opinion lies and makes recommendations. This is the feeling of the group. Now, there may be people in the group who don't agree, but the league attitude has always been that while every league member is able to say, I think otherwise, once a decision is arrived at by the whole body, then that league member can't in public say, I am a league member and I disagree. I mean, she can say, yes, she disagrees in her own name, but not with reference to her league membership. So that the board doesn't actually decide anything. It's the members who do the deciding. We call it the grassroots approach. And then these opinions that the board says are the majority opinions go to the annual meeting. And then the annual meeting votes on whether they accept these things or they don't. They can turn it down. You don't have to agree with them. But that's the process.
Yeah, that's true of the national issues also.
All the issues. The state issues go to, from all the leagues in the state, go to the state board. And the national issues from all the leagues in all the states go to the NAO. I never understood how the national board can handle it, because it's a tremendous job to do, take these enormous number, thousands of leagues in the United States, and say this league says this, and this league says this, and this league says this, and most of them are saying this, and this is what we will present to the convention, and then the convention has to agree or disagree. But that's how it's done. It's never the board's decision.
Mm.
Very interesting, because I don't think most organizations work that way.
Yeah,
and I think this was what bothered me with that council thing, that that we weren't really accomplishing anything as individuals, that it was more cut and dried, in other words. No, it's an unusual, and it's the hardest thing in the world for new members to understand what consensus is, and the fact that votes are not taken, but to still get the feeling of the group as to what they want to say. It's as a matter of fact, in the early days when I first belonged, the discussion leaders were trained. I went through a training session with Dorothy Boyne up at Chatham, and we had 4 weekly sessions before we were allowed to be discussion leaders. And there were strict rules as to what we could and couldn't do. We could not enter into the discussion at all. Our opinion didn't count at all. If we wanted to make our opinion felt, we had to go to another unit meeting and not express ourselves in the one at which we were discussing leader. We were absolutely neutral. And the only things we said were supposed to bring out the feelings of the other people there, not our own. It got much less formal and much less rigid. And now I don't know whether they do any training of discussion leaders at all. It's a tricky thing to do. It's not easy to be a lead discussion leader. It's a difficult, it's interesting, it's fascinating to do.
Well, as president, what accomplishments in the league have given you the most satisfaction, would you say?
It's a funny thing, but it has nothing to do with the league at all. My mother was a very civic-minded person. She was president of everything. She was president of the sisterhood and of all kinds of things. Not the council. I think the only thing she was never the council of the Ladies' Hospital Aid Society. She ran the Federation money-raising, fundraising drives for years. She had a lot to do with the organization of the opening of the new Montefiore Hospital and the staffing of it with the guides, the people who showed people around and so on. And I think she intimidated me.
Mm.
And as a result, I shied away from ever doing the sort of thing she did. I never wanted to, whether I was afraid to. I have a feeling I may have been afraid to. I worked under her, you know, always at all these things, and a lot of it went on our own house. Groups, do you remember Flora Rothenberg? Did you know Flora Rothenberg?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, she was one of the ones who worked for my mother during these drives. She was a paid employee, I think, of the Federation, if I'm not mistaken, something. Anyway, and I think it scared me, and I just never wanted to do anything. And it was my husband who talked me into taking the presidency. I was willing always to do subordinate things, you see. I was always willing to be chairman of a committee or to do voter service or to be a secretary. None of this bothered me. But when they offered me the presidency of the league, I was going to turn it down. And my husband pushed me into
it. Good for him.
I just had the feeling I couldn't do things like that. And don't ask me why. So that I think one of the great things was that I discovered I could do things I never thought I could do. Of course, this was true of the whole league experience, like talking to a group of men at a Rotary Club meeting. Never thought. I even went on TV once. There was a panel discussion. This had to do with the financing of the schools too. And it's difficult to talk in public when you're a league member because there are things you can't express yourself on. They were talking about the amount of tax-exempt property and the difficulty in raising money because so much property was tax-exempt, religious schools and churches and so on. Well, we had never studied that or taken a stand on it. The PCPE did. They could speak up. But I couldn't. The Pittsburgh Council on Public Education. They didn't have our strict rules. But we had never studied it, and when we don't study something, we don't take a position on it. And in public, you can't get up and say, yes, we think there's too much tax-exempt property, and yes, we think that churches should pay for things that aren't strictly religious, you know, things, parking lots and so on, and businesses pay a tax on them. We couldn't say things like that, and it's difficult. You go on TV and they ask you questions that you can't answer. And people don't understand this. You say the League hasn't taken a position on this. We can't express ourselves. Hey, they think you're, you know, wishy-washy. But we always used to say we wear two hats. For years and years, we demonstrated the old voting machines. I don't mean the new ones. At Kaufman's. They were on the first floor, and we used to demonstrate how you used them. But we could never indicate that we had any party affiliations. As we were serving the League, we were nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. And even when it came to a ballot question, we couldn't, while we were demonstrating the machine, even though we had a League position in favor of the ballot question, while we were demonstrating the machine, we weren't permitted to say that. And we used to have to show them, this is how you vote yes, and this is how you vote no, and this is how you vote for a Democrat, and this is how you vote for a Republican. You walked a real fine line with that, because individually, as people, as individuals, we were encouraged to be political and to be partisan and to support candidates and parties and so on. But when you were an officer, president, this was one of the differences between us and the other League. You know that there are two Leagues, you know.
Maybe you'd like to explain that.
Yes, in 1948, we used to be called the League of Women Voters of Allegheny County.
Okay.
In 1948, some of the members of the League objected to some new bylaws which were being proposed by National. One of them had to do with the president not succeeding yourself for more than two terms. So this group who didn't want to agree to the National bylaws broke off from National, disaffiliated themselves from National, and said they were their own League. Well, it left the rest of the people with nothing. So the rest of the people organized themselves into what you call a provisional League, which is how all Leagues start out. And called themselves the League of Women Voters of Pittsburgh. We actually had a court case in which we tried to get back the title of Allegheny County because we felt it belonged to the National group. But the court decision went against us. The other League kept the name. But they call themselves Allegheny County League of Women Voters. All our Leagues are called League of Women Voters of Pittsburgh area, Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania, the United States. The League comes first. This is why it's still going. It must be, otherwise that thing would have popped. This is why at first we were somewhat hampered because we were Pittsburgh and yet we had suburban members. And that was why we changed ourselves into an area League first, and then we had the spin-offs to Mount Lebanon and so on. The other League, we cooperate with each. We're not enemies, really.
They used to be.
Yes, well, in a way, yes. But we get calls that don't belong to us. I can put our number right here,
yeah.
So that when we get calls that obviously aren't ours, we can refer
the other League
them,
still
and
active.
The other League does the same thing. Yes, they're still active, but they behave in a peculiar way. In the first place, Mrs. Templeton Smith, who was the president, was president, I guess, till she died.
Correct.
And my aunt thought I was president of the other League. My aunt Mildred belonged to the League, but she belonged to the other League. She was a friend of Mrs. Templeton Smith. And she thought, when I got to be president of the League, she thought I was president of the other League. I never had the nerve to disillusion her. Anyway, they did things that we couldn't do. Mrs. Smith, for example, was a Goldwater delegate.
No.
At a convention when she was president of her League. Well, no Krasnivar League would be permitted to be a delegate to a partisan convention. She was a Goldwater delegate. Our presidents aren't allowed to do things like
that. No, but if you do become active in politics, there's a certain, you must disassociate.
If a president would want to become active in politics, she'd have to resign from her position. There's no question about that. The president, the voter service chairman particularly, are not permitted to do overt public things. Now, everybody can have coffees in their basements, you know, and address letters that nobody knows about. But they can't write letters to newspapers as lead presidents or secretaries or whoever. No, can't do that.
Well, in what direction would you like to see the league go now?
I'd like to see... I'd like to see us continue to do what we do, except that I think we have to make some changes because of the working members. We have started. We have a downtown unit that meets during the lunch hour downtown. We went from having daytime annual meetings to having nighttime annual meetings. Mm-hmm. Our annual meetings are in the evenings now. They didn't used to be. We have still some daytime units out in the suburbs, but in the city we don't. We only have night units in the city because there aren't enough people free in the daytime to come.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Liz. It's been extremely interesting. And you were very easy to interview.
I'm rambling.
No, you didn't ramble at all. Thanks very much.
I think
much.
It was rambling. I don't know. But...
we'll add a little postscript since you
all right.
brought something up.
Well, I just remembered that I had been quite active in our study of desegregation in the Pittsburgh public schools, a position that we've had for a long time, late 1960s, I believe, but we've revised repeatedly. We haven't let it sit still. We've gone over it. The last time we went over it was somewhere like 1980, something like that. But the main thrust of our consensus on desegregation was that it should start early, that it was most successful if the schools could be desegregated in the very early years, kindergarten, first grade, since the children had no feelings in those days and hadn't been influenced by their parents' feelings, and could adjust so easily and learn to be friends with each other. I don't think the schools have ever accomplished that completely, but I think they've made some strides. And it was an interesting thing to do. That was one thing. We've done a lot of things with the Pittsburgh schools besides finances. We studied mental health in the Pittsburgh schools at one time too, and talked about some teacher training to help the teachers become sensitive to difficulties, emotional difficulties that children might have, not just difficulties with their schoolwork. And the business of the schools for disruptive children, the alternate schools, I think they call them. At one time we were very opposed to that. We felt that these classes should be in the school. They shouldn't set the children apart in separate school all by themselves, that this was bad for them. They should remain in the school where they could meet with other children. And if they were too disruptive, then a separate classroom would be helpful. I don't think we got very far with that. Our most successful thing was the business, the state, the decision on the governor succeeding himself. Because when I first joined, the governor could only serve one term. And we had a position for years that we wanted a change in an amendment to the Pennsylvania Constitution permitting the governor to succeed himself, and that was passed finally.
That was due largely to
And we did a tremendous amount of work on that. The year it came up for a vote, I had my room filled with things that were to go to the polls to be posted, you know, or handed out at the polls, asking people to vote in favor of the amendment. And league members went to all the polling places they could cover. I used every brown paper bag that I ever got from the Giant Eagle to put these little flyers in, and then people took them around to the polls and stood there and passed them out to the voters, and it passed. And I don't know whether Shat was, I don't remember who the first one was, but whoever the first one was to serve two terms, that was partly because of the work we did. And we always tell that to new members. We always say, don't be discouraged. Look how long it took us to make any impression on this. I think it was years. I mean, I know we were working on it when I first joined, and I forget when it was passed, but it took a long time. So, and sometimes we knock our heads against stone walls.